All right. So it's great to be here with you guys. This is the Confidence Cleanse. That's the title we arrived at. It's how to rid yourself of self-doubt and start showing up as your best self. This is something that Susan and I have actually been planning on putting together and really delivering to you guys for a long time. We've been discussing this for several months. So I'm really, really excited to finally work with Susan on this. But this session is going to be talking about something that obviously has resonated with a lot of you. Confidence is a big issue, I find, among freelance writers, self-employed professional. And we're going to be covering kind of different angles of the confidence issue, specifically how to identify what's stunting your self-confidence, also how to redefine confidence to find a version that fits you. I think for a lot of us, the way we look at confidence is something that other people have. It's like those are their clothes, and we need to find a set of clothes that we feel comfortable wearing, you know, because there always is. It's not just one set of fashion, if you will. It's there are many different flavors of this. You just got to find what works for you. And then finally, how to take out the garbage to fix your confidence issues right now and then resolve them for good. Now, I know many of you know Susan. You've worked with Susan because she is she actually does a lot of the coaching in a couple of my coaching programs. But for those of you who are not familiar with her, just real quick, Susan is a very talented freelance writer, editor, and project manager with many years of experience as a freelancer, coach, and entrepreneur. She has an extensive coaching background that includes facilitating executive mastermind groups and working side by side with women leaders. During her career, she has owned a retail liquor outlet, two business coaching franchises, and she started a membership organization for professional women. Since 2013, she has focused her energy on being a resource for women who want to tell their stories in an effective and powerful way. That's her target market, is women leaders. So Susan, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. This is so fun. I agree. We've been talking about this for a long time, and I'm really excited to be able to share some ideas with this audience today.
Likewise. Great topic. Yeah, it really is. It really is. And obviously, it's resonated with many folks here. So let's start by defining confidence in the context of our discussion today. So when you hear the word confidence, what do you think of in terms of kind of the work we do here and our status as self-employed professionals?
Well, it's a topic that I've been interested in for a while now. I've read a number of books on the topic, and I actually wrote a blog on my own website for addressing the topic of confidence. Kind of interesting. So just to really, in a nutshell, it's defined, we could define it as an extraordinary, almost unimaginable belief that you can succeed even when the odds are stacked against you. It's the sense that you can achieve what you set out to do and that you have what it takes. You just know it. And it's sort of a feeling as well as a mindset. But it's kind of a weird thing, honestly. Confidence is strange because some people just seem to have it naturally. They're born with it. Some people seem to have a little too much. And then there's the rest of us that are kind of trying to figure this confidence thing out. We're kind of somewhere in between. And I think that initially what trips us up, generally speaking, is the idea of absolutes. So we tend to think we're either confident or not. It's black and white. And unfortunately, it would be great if it was that simple. There's a lot more that goes into giving us confidence, making us feel confident. It's a lot more complex, and it's got a lot to do with how we're wired. It's got to do with societal and cultural impact. It's got to do with our upbringing. There's a lot of moving parts to confidence. And so I want to talk a little bit about all of those things. And then there's also the sense of, you know, how do we use confidence? Like, how do I use it every day, and how do you use it? And then there's that delightful little voice in our head that keeps us kind of firmly planted in place. Sometimes we get stuck if our confidence isn't strong enough.
Yeah, I know that voice really well. And in fact, I should maybe clarify something before we really get going, is guys, Susan and I struggle with this stuff just like anybody else. Okay. So, you know, we're not here to tell you, hey, we're really self-confident people, and we're going to tell those of you who don't feel confident how to do this. Not at all. In fact, I think the reason we're both so fascinated by this topic is that for us, this is, you know, this is a journey. It's really not a destination, right?
Absolutely.
So this is, you know, it's, we're all learning from each other. What's interesting is that, you know, for us, this has been an area of study, something we've really spent a lot of time thinking through, learning, experimenting with different ideas. In you know, when it comes to confidence, Susan, in writers in particular, what do you see writers struggle with from a confidence standpoint?
I think it's writers and really anyone who's, I've spent a lot of time working with entrepreneurs, and I think regardless of what business you're in, what kind of business you're running, I think it's that negative voice in our heads. It's the thing that keeps telling us those stories and that we've cultivated over the years, and they stick with us, and we start saying things like, I can't, I should, I wish, I don't have. I'm trying. We tend to, that voice tends to make us then say things that are negative. And I think, and then it is, if that's not enough, then that voice is also saying, well, what if I'm wrong? What if I look stupid? What if I fail? What if I get rejected? What if people don't like me? What if, you know, my mother, father, spouse, dog, cat, whoever disapproves? So that voice is coming at us from a couple of different directions. And unfortunately, what it does is it kind of turns us into, it paralyzes us. You know, when we start listening, if we're paying too much attention to that voice, it means that we stand still. There's a lack of action on our part. Maybe we're afraid to ask for something we really want, whether it's more money or a bigger project. And unfortunately for freelancers, it means that we miss out on opportunities. And that is, you know, as you're building a freelance business, it's really not okay. This is something that's, it's so important to be aware of the stories you're telling yourself and then figure out how to manage that voice better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think one of the things that happens to us is that I think freelancing is probably the best training ground for developing greater confidence, just because it's all on you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You have to really, right, push those boundaries more than you ever have before. So in a way, you know, I like to always look at the positive side of things. And, you know, this is a blessing, being able to do what we do, because no matter what happens, or where we are 5 years from now, if you operate with some of the under some of the constraints and apply some of the strategies we're going to be sharing today, you're going to be better off. You know, you're going to be a better, more confident person than if you had stayed, you know, in a day job or a situation where you really didn't have to step outside your comfort zone as much as you do here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because my daughter just graduated from college last month. And over the 4 years that she was in school, I can remember her telling me a number of times that she was afraid to ask questions. She was afraid to raise her hand and ask questions. And all I could think was, oh my gosh, all that money we invested and she was afraid to ask questions. I mean, to me, it was crazy. She didn't want to look stupid. And I think as a young person, you know, someone in your late teens, early 20s, that's probably common. But if you find yourself today in a business, that's something that you need to address. You need to be able to feel confident to ask questions and kind of step out of that comfort zone. I think, you know, and what it comes down to, Ed, for folks that are freelancers, is that we want a different voice in our heads. We want the one that's consistently saying, I can, I will, I have, and primarily because it's, we want to shift our aspirations. You know, for all of us, it's about making more money, getting bigger projects, getting rid of that. The term I hear all the time among the folks in your groups is about imposter syndrome, feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm really not capable. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm not very good at it. Being able to negotiate better, you know, that confidence really comes into play when it comes to negotiation or going after the big clients or the better clients, the bigger projects. You want to just kind of get that self-confidence up to a better level, a better place, and keep it there. And I think most folks I find are aware, I'm lacking self-confidence. It's an issue for me, but really don't know what to do about it. Like, how do I move past this and get past it and become more confident?
Well, just to add a little bit of context, I said a few minutes ago that, you know, you and I have struggled with this and continue to struggle with this. This is a journey, not a destination. So tell us a little bit about, before we start getting into, you know, some of these strategies, some of the things that you've struggled with over the years in the confidence arena.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I worked for others, I had more confidence. You know, I was in sales for the first part of my career, and I actually did pretty well in sales. I did a couple of different things, but then I got into a little later in my career. I was battling this voice in my head, and it was pushing me to do things, you know, make poor choices for myself in terms of work. And you know, when I think about it, it was kind of a voice. It probably came a bit from my mom, who loved my mother to pieces, and she was always trying to protect me. So she was saying things to me that impacted me deeply, and that she didn't have the intention of it impacting me negatively. It's the way it landed on me and the way I kind of internalized it. And I carried that with me for a long time. And then this voice was constantly pushing me to take crummy jobs. Once I got into the second half of my career, I ended up getting fired for the first time in my life from a really good job. I was devastated. And so I ended up just taking jobs because I had to pay the bills. And I'd go into a crummy job, one that I was really miserably unhappy with, and I turned out to be a failure because I hated it. And then I'd desperately go and find another crummy job, and the cycle would start again. And so I spent a lot of time feeling like a failure, bouncing from thing to thing, and that imposter syndrome. I just felt like a fake. I felt like, wow, I'm not good at anything. This is, you know, it gets pretty tough. It got pretty tough for me for a while there. And the older that I got, the more my failures piled up. So I had businesses that didn't work out. I had jobs that, you know, again, bouncing kind of like a merry-go-round. And the more that they piled up, that voice got louder and stronger, and it turned into a bit of a bully for me. And then I would say probably about 6 years ago, I came across a woman. She was a coach. Her name is Lisa Jimenez. And I didn't work with her directly, but she wrote a book called Slay the Dragon. And she has quite a bit of resources online. And she helped me through her reading her and following her. She helped me to understand that I needed to retrain my brain and my subconscious. As a result of that, I ended up creating truth cards, what I call truth cards. And I have quite a stack of them here, actually. They're index cards that I hand wrote affirmations on, and I would read them every single day. And this is what's cool. You know, I hadn't realized it when we started talking about this subject, and you and I, Ed, talking about putting this conversation together. I pulled the cards back out and I realized, gosh, I haven't looked at them in a long time and they're still so powerful. So what I would do, and I've got 15 truth cards, plus some extra ones. And so I would handwrite a couple of affirmations on each one, and I'm going to read some of them to you, just so you can get a sense of what they are. But so I would every morning go into my office in my house, shut the door. My dogs would be sitting here and they'd get to hear, they have them memorized actually, cause they heard them every day. And I would stand up and I would imagine that I was speaking to a large audience. And that my task was to read the things on these cards and convince these people. I had to say it with enough enthusiasm that they would believe that it's true. And so I would stand up and I would say out loud, and I'll read a few of the things on here. I expect big results. They are normal for me. I'm providing a very valuable service to my market. there's an abundance of work out there. I am successful right now, today. I can do this. I am smart. I am strong and powerful. I am exactly enough as I am. I honor my intuition. I am disciplined and efficient. I see fear as a sign of a big thing and I go for it. I have patience for the important things. I make daily progress towards my goals. This is a fun one. I'm a master copywriter and strategist. I'm an entrepreneur. I am a wealthy writer. I love what I do. I'm committed to being my best and achieving my goals. I don't let anyone stand in my way or hold me back, including me. I am proud of my accomplishments. I keep my promises, especially to myself. I bring abundant energy to everything I do. I feel great and proud about how I make money. I own my day. I do whatever it takes, whether or not I feel like it. I attract great people. I make powerful choices. I am kind to me. I am committed to making my writing success a reality. I bounce back quickly from setbacks and disappointments. I speak powerfully to myself and to others. I am financially free. I take a powerful, positive, aggressive attitude towards building my business. I make my clients' lives easier and less stressful. And I have a whole bunch more, and I won't go through too many more, but I wanted to just give you a sense of how that feels and to say it out loud. And I would literally, this is how I would start my day every day. Come to my office, pop my computer on, let it warm up. And in the meantime, I would just read these out loud. And I think at the time there were days when, boy, it was hard to say that stuff out loud. It was like, oh my gosh. But and I struggled, especially at times when I just really was feeling like a failure. And so saying that stuff out loud was really a challenge, but I forced myself to do it. It's like, no, I gotta retrain my brain. I gotta stop thinking that I can't and start thinking that I can. And I have to remind myself of it every day. And looking back now, I'm amazed, honestly, at how powerful it really was. Because I read through them and I smile. It's like, oh yeah, you know, I remember doing this every day. And wow, and I would say that many of the things on those cards, if they weren't true at that moment, they start to become true because that's where I put my brain every morning. That's where I put my mind every morning, was focusing on the positive and the things that I've already accomplished.
You know what I love about what you just did is that I've heard of affirmations. I've heard of, you know, writing them down and reading them, but two things that you were doing that I hadn't really thought about. One was really the emphasis on saying it out loud and standing. Mm-hmm. But even more powerful than that, I think, is imagining yourself that you are delivering that to a large group. Like you were saying that to a large group of people in front of you. Yep. There's something really powerful about that, because it would be very difficult to do that without conviction. And even if you had to just find that conviction somewhere, because they're in front of you and you don't want to sound
fake.
Fake, yeah. 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 You have to muster that conviction somehow. So that, I think, is really the key. I've done it before, but I've never thought about doing it that way.
Yeah. Well, and I do a fair amount of public speaking. I've led workshops in person and things like that. So I would also imagine myself making eye contact with the people in the audience. You know, it just might be a face. It's not anyone I know, but just, you know, I would imagine someone sitting there and me making eye contact as I'm saying this, because that's a good way to convince someone, to get them it's an extra level of communication. So it worked for me. It was incredibly helpful, and I still do affirmations, and I read probably 80% of what I have. It only takes a couple minutes, but it just gets you focused. I think it gets you off on the right it's just a strong way to start the day, especially if you're currently in a place where you're feeling imposter syndrome really bearing down, you're really feeling like you're not successful at this moment or not gaining the momentum you want. This is just such an awesome way to just remind yourself, oh yeah, you know, this is where I want to go. I think the power of this kind of stuff is, it certainly helped me tremendously.
Well, I know you've identified three different things that make it harder for self-employed professionals to really develop the confidence they need to perform well. Okay, can you talk briefly about those, and then we're going to get into some practical ideas?
Yeah, definitely. The number one thing, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, is that society really shapes our thinking. It's if you sit back and think about it for a minute, there's certain behavior that men are expected to exhibit. Same thing, certain behavior that women are expected to exhibit. It's what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. It's a lot to do with how we're raised. You know, I mentioned my mom, what we're taught, and this is generations of patterned thinking. And for women in particular, one of the things that we're raised to do is to be nice and be polite and be demure and be perhaps quiet, even depending on the culture that you're brought up in, or that, you know, whatever cultural influences. Some have this more ingrained than others. So this is just literally generations of thinking this way. And this is probably certainly the things that I read and the research I've done is, this is probably the most impactful, the thing that gets in the way the most. The second one for freelancers in particular, and again, any business, it doesn't matter what kind of a business you're running, but if you've been in the corporate world, you're accustomed to having work given to you. And unless you were in sales and you were out, knocking on doors, most of the time you're in an office setting, you're in a corporate setting, and work is just given to you. And you're not accustomed to having to go out and find it. And so this is a huge shift for freelancers in particular. And the shift is into a hunter mentality. And unfortunately, it's not necessarily associated with being nice and being that, you know, polite and that kind of thing. I think we carry some of that with us. And then the third thing is rejection. And that's something, again, that if you're used to being in a corporate environment, rejection might not be as much of a possibility. And as a freelancer, it's pretty much a daily event, is that you're sending out those warm emails, you're not getting responses, or maybe getting responses and they're not interested, that kind of thing. So that has an impact on. And if we're doing it every day, then that definitely has an impact on our confidence. It can push us backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great insights there. All right. So let's get into some additional solutions. How can we improve our confidence, and how can we tap into that higher confidence on demand, if you will, when we really need it? Because let's face it, sometimes you're about to enter in a situation. It's like, man, I could really use it now.
Definitely. Well, there's five things that that I came up with that I think are the most important, and they're from a number of different resources, and I'll share those with everybody too as I go. But the first one is self-perception. We tend to bounce back and forth between thinking, we're doing all right, pretty good, to thinking that we're completely incapable, unworthy, lazy, and we're going to get found out. And we tend to bounce back and forth between the two. And some days are better than others, right? Jen Sincero is an author, and she wrote a great book called You're a Badass. And if you haven't read it, it's laugh out loud funny. It's a great book. And so I'm going to reference her a couple times in this. But she says, it's just as easy to believe we're awesome as it is to believe we suck. It takes the same amount of energy and focus. And I love that point, because we think about, if you step back and think about it for a minute, you're going to spend as much time being negative and as much energy being negative that you are being positive. And I just think that's a really important point. So the solution would be to take a look at the voices in your head, or the stories that you've got that you're carrying with you. One's a story or a voice of possibility, of capability, and the other is kind of doom and gloom. So are you giving fuel and power to the negative voice. Is this, it's not about getting rid of this voice, but it's really just about putting more energy and time into empowering the positive one, the one that really talks to us and helps us remember what we're capable of. The second thing is to accept those voices, that voice or those stories in your head. They're part of you. They're who you are. It's at this point, it's pretty baked in usually, I think. And I bet most folks on the line can remember dealing with that voice or those stories from a pretty early age, pretty early in life. Maybe you grappled with them in high school or college, like my daughter, you know, going through college and, you know, not wanting to look stupid, afraid to raise her hand. I think that the most important solution here in terms of the voices or the stories is to make peace with that negative voice. It's part of who you are, and to keep in mind that it's trying to protect you. It's a voice or a story that you developed as a child, perhaps, from based on feedback, like me, from my mom, from our parents, teachers, peers, anyone that we interacted with regularly. And the goal was to protect you from further emotional pain. So it was really just this voice is kind of reminding you, hey, the last time you did that, you got hurt, and that hurt, or it was, you know, it was unpleasant, whatever the case may be. So it's just trying to protect you. It's kind of an interesting thought. But the other thing is to remember that part of what will build your confidence is success. And the unfortunate part about having a lack of confidence, I mentioned earlier, is that it can paralyze us. We stand still. But you won't experience any success if you stay in the harbor and never set sail. I think most of us know the adage that a ship in harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are for. We need to step out and step into that, take that chance, and because as we achieve success, that's really just builds our confidence. The third thing to think about is to understand what your own issues are, what your stories are, and how your subconscious brain controls you. So, for example, do you have a story about money that maybe is negative, or around negotiation? Maybe your imposter syndrome is just out of control right now, or you're afraid to speak up and raise your hand. The best thing to do in that case really is to figure out what issues are feeding the negative voice and get you saying things like, I can't, I don't have, I always, I wish, all that negative self-talk, and especially with failure. So for me, I had a lot of failures. They were piling up. It was stacking up for me. And I could have easily just kept saying to myself, oh, I'll probably just fail at this next job or business or whatever I do. Then I shared with you that there were times reading those truth cards that it was really hard. It was hard to say those things out loud because I really didn't believe it at the time. But it really did help me to retrain my brain.
Hey, Susan, a couple of comments. This is great, sure. Great stuff. One is on the second key. One of the most important things that I have learned from mindfulness meditation, and I'm a total amateur at it, is this whole idea of you just fine. You hear the voices, you hear that, you feel that thinking, and just let it go. I mean, like, just instead of trying to dampen it, just acknowledge it. And then take the attention away from it.
Yep.
You know, and that has been a game changer for me because before I really try to suppress that, but it's so, so hard. In fact, the more you try to suppress it, I think we can all agree, right? The more powerful it becomes. Right. So just acknowledging it in a strange way just takes the power away from it. So that's something that I think we can, many of us can relate. But if you can kind of remind yourself of that, when it does come up, to don't tell yourself, oh, don't be stupid, don't act this way, you know, man
up.
Don't
fight it. Yeah,
don't fight it.
Yeah.
That is just maybe stop and say, oh, wait a minute. I see what I'm doing, and I see this thing, and I see this feeling. It's okay. Yep. And it just loses its grip on you. And then with this third key, understanding what your own issues are and how your subconscious controls you. I don't know if anyone here can relate, but comparing ourselves to others is probably one of the worst things you could do. In this area, right? I mean, like comparison, I do it daily, and I just try to catch myself more. Because again, just like with a mindfulness thing, is rather than beat myself up for it, I'm just trying to say, oh, I see what I'm doing. I'm comparing, and reminding myself, you know what? That game has no winning end. Like there'll always be somebody to compare myself to, and yeah. I remember comparing myself to others 10 years ago, you right. know, and I'm still doing it today. And you think, oh, you know, when I get to this level, then I won't compare. No, there'll always be somebody to compare yourself to. So I think it's just being aware is 80% of the solution, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and as writers, we're always wanting to read. And that's almost like a double-edged sword, right? Because we're out. And every time I read someone's newsletter, like I get Anne Hanley's newsletter, and she's such an amazing writer. And I feel myself wilting. I read her newsletter and I think, oh my gosh, she's so good. And I'm so not good at this. And it's, you have to just, like you said, catch yourself and say, wait a minute, she's writing a different thing. She's a good writer in that style. You know, sometimes I'll step back and say, you know, but that's not my forte. My forte is something different. I you know, I do different work. I write longer form and things like that. But it's really just thinking about, for comparison's sake, looking at, is there something in this person's writing that maybe I could adopt? I kind of like the way she says that or spins that or talks about this or that. And maybe adopt that and say, you know what, instead of comparing myself, why don't I try that? Why don't I try writing that way? And basically blending in more of that style into the way I write. And that,
how about telling yourself that maybe Anne Hanley is secretly looking at your stuff?
Saying, there you go.
Oh, he's so good at that.
Good heavens, I hope not. But okay.
No, at this other thing that you do well. You
know? I know. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, that's a good way to kind of turn it around. It's like, what would they think? It's actually a good thing to have, if you don't have someone who can critique and give you feedback on your writing, you really should. Someone that'll be kind and honest, to help you become a better writer. I mean, I just think it's important to have someone reviewing your work and telling you and giving you feedback. So, I agree. The comparisonitis is challenging.
Oh, it's bad. Mm-hmm. I just want to take a quick time out, guys, and just check in, and would love to know if you could let us know in the chat area, what's been most helpful for you so far? What have you gotten out of this? Can you name one thing? Just let us know in the chat area. I want to make sure that you guys are still with us, that this is resonating. This is hitting home, and that it's helping in some way. Yeah, that whole idea of just kind of flipping it around, Susan, something I've tried to do, and I need to do it more often. It's like, okay, let's pretend that they're looking at my stuff, and then saying, oh my God, you know, I know that I do this other thing, but I love what Ed does and how he does it. And man, that would, because if that did happen, that would shift my mood
completely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
See, Tracy says the idea of using affirmation cards, brilliant. Yeah, good. Margo says, I can so relate to everything you've been talking about. Okay, good.
Yay!
Robin, self-talk doesn't always tell you the truth. Ooh, yes. Anna, being more intentional by growing my confidence. Yeah, right? It's something you got to work on. Kelly, I love the affirmation cards. Oh, that one hit home. Beverly says, imagining convincing an audience. Yeah. Mm. Katie says, yes, an evergreen topic. However, I must say the whole affirmation ritual is not new, but has never been something I felt much traction with. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's, you got to find, you know, if you're willing to try it, you got to find a way that's like actually resonating with you. Like I said, I mean, for me in the past, yeah, I've done it. But like now that I hear Susan add this twist to it, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Now that would probably work better for me. Standing up, saying it out loud. So, you know, you got to find an approach that will work for you. Nick says the game of comparing yourself to others has no winning end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Liz, feeling hopeful because you got unstuck. So it's possible. It sure is. Yeah. Andrea says, I feel relieved to know this doesn't just happen to me. I never would have guessed that Susan had not just one failure, but a string of them. Appreciate opening up, this topic. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. Definitely. Yeah. We're all in the same boat, guys.
No kidding. And there's a, actually I wanted to go back to this one thing. There's a quote that, that I found that I think would be, really interesting about when I was doing the research to get ready for today. And it's from a post that ended up on the, an article on Huffington Post about confidence. And it says, confidence is a muscle like any other muscle. It requires training in order to radically change our lives. But you have to be aware of the difference between feeling confident and being confident, because feeling confident is based on your current circumstances and being confident is regardless of the situation. And I just love that. It's a great way to think about a muscle. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that too.
Let me recap so far. So everyone, we're all on the same page. So far we've talked about key number one, self-perception, right? To start there. The second key was to accept that those voices or stories in your head are a part of who you are. The third key was to understand that your own issues, what they are and how your subconscious controls you. So kind of understanding what the root cause is. So let's then get into the fourth key that you've identified.
Absolutely. So the fourth one is, think about your personal definition of confidence. And I would bet that it's probably wrong. And let me explain. Here's what confidence is not. It's not arrogant, pushy, macho, annoying, unladylike, any of that. I challenge you to think about somebody that you respect who really embodies confidence in your mind. I sincerely doubt you would use any of those kind of terms to describe them. Someone who has a really comfortable confidence, male or female, it's almost attractive. You just want to spend more time with them. And as opposed to that, you know, that pushy, annoying kind of an approach. And I think that's an important thing to be thinking about is, how do you define confidence? So the solution here would be to redefine, to rethink the way you think about confidence. I would encourage you to not think about confidence as this mysterious, glamorous, inspirational thing. Like, if you've got confidence up on a pedestal somewhere, take it down, because it's really something that I want you to think of as what it is. It's simple. It's a simple, concrete tool that you absolutely need as an entrepreneur. And remember that confidence is that muscle. It requires training. And you've got to build it. So think of it as any other kind of a tool that you would use to build your business. Confidence is just something you need and you need to work on.
Yeah. So it's within reach now. It's absolutely not something, oh, well, you know, in 6 months, I think I'll be able to access that. No, right. I sometimes like to kind of take an extreme situation, and because confidence is all relative too, isn't it? You know, like what I might feel like I have a self-confidence problem. But if I ask myself, okay, what am I doing regularly today without really giving it much thought that somebody else would think, wow, how did you do that? Right? I'm already doing something that somebody thinks is amazing. It requires all the self-confidence. So what are those things? And I think if you use or run through that thought exercise, you'll come up with a few things. And so I think the bottom line is you have access to that now. You just don't realize it because you're always looking forward. You're not looking at your current situation or where you've come from, because I'm sure you've made, I mean, gosh, the fact that you went out on your own. Do you know how many people would look love to at do you and say, oh my God, I got a buddy of mine who calls me every month or so. And he's just curious to see what I'm doing, because he's just fascinated by the fact that nobody's looking over my shoulder, that I'm, you know, kind of running my own thing. And he just finds it fascinating. And he's very envious of that. So the fact that you went out on your own just says a lot about something, about your self-confidence. You just, maybe you've forgotten, you know, some of the things you do have now that other people wish they had in terms of confidence.
Right. Very true. Yeah. And so final one, the fifth key is, and this is one that actually came from a lot of the work that I do with you, Ed, and coaching some of the folks in your different programs, is don't be afraid to own your skills. And for those of you who are in some of the programs that I coach, I help Ed with, you've probably heard me say this before, but I will look at things like emails or social media posts, and I look at how poorly they're written, and I think, okay, so I'm probably the best writer of all the people that I know and interact with regularly. You know, I look around and I just think, oh my goodness, I mean, they can't spell and they can't put a decent sentence together. And it just remind myself, you know, this isn't an arrogant thing. It's a fact. I'm just a better writer just by nature of who I am and how I'm wired. I'm better than most of the people around me. So don't be afraid to own your skills. And if you're fairly new to freelancing, this is a really important point. What I would recommend as a solution for you is to create a values and skills list. And make sure that it's fact-based. It's a fact-based assessment of your abilities. And then that's the one part, the skills. What skill do I already have that I can own, it's me and I'm good at this. You don't have to be the best. Like, I'm not the best writer in the world. I'm working in a direction where I'm going to reach a high level, and that's my personal goal. But I'm still today, even though I've been doing this now for 6 years, I'm still learning. I'm learning constantly, and I'm constantly evolving my writing skill. But the second half of this is probably more important. And listening to my truth cards when I was reading my affirmations, you may have picked up on this, but the other half of your list should be your values list. And this is something that never changes. You can take this no matter what you do or where you go. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So the other thing on your list should be integrity, compassion, persistence, detail-oriented, professionalism. No matter what I do, no matter who I write for or what I do for work, if I decided to not do this anymore and go be a barista at the local coffee shop, I would still have integrity, compassion, persistence, professionalism. All of that is, again, I'm wired that way, and that I'm proud of the values that I have and that I bring to the table. I even have my values listed on my website. I have a little spot where I put them, what's important to me, because that is, you know, even if I've never done a white paper before, but I'm trying to break into writing white papers, it doesn't change the fact that I'm a person of integrity, that I'm, you know, professional, that I'm, you know, persistent. All of that comes with me. That's part of my package. And I think that if you make a list and start looking at what is inherent in me, that people would find value in. People want to do business with people. We all know that, but they want to do business with good people, right? They want to do business with a writer that they know isn't going to cut and run in the middle of a project, that you're there to, you know, to finish it out no matter what happens, and you'll do your best. And that's as important and as valuable to not only your clients, but it should be important to you too. And I think just being aware and making that list and saying, you know what, what else do I bring to the table? Not just my writing skills. I'm a bigger package, and there's more that I bring to the table.
So, Susan, this is great stuff. I love that you've condensed this into five keys. There's a lot we can obviously unpack here. Other things we could talk about, but I think these are five things are a great, great start. And, you know, I'm kind of an 80-20 thinker. I think these are kind of the 20%. Things that can have the 80% of the impact.
Yes.
I'd like to talk a little bit about how we can put these ideas into action. So you gave us some really actionable, very practical tips, but you know, maybe if you can kind of give us share a framework or kind of okay, here's how I would do play by play. I would do this and then I would look at that. How would you summarize that?
Definitely. I think, you know, the first place to start, we've mentioned the word awareness. And I think for most of us, yeah, I lack confidence or I'm struggling with this or that. Being aware is number one. So what I would recommend is that you keep track for a day, the number of times that you either say out loud or in to yourself, I always, I never, I can't. pay attention to the language that you're using. Pay attention to that voice that's telling you. And if you say it out loud, that means your brain is believing it. That's your current reality. So start, and I think it would be interesting, anybody who's brave enough to do this and then share it on Facebook, I'd love to hear and see what you came up with, because I think it's one of those, I was doing a workshop, and I was doing a lot of traveling about 2 years ago now. And one of the things that my co-presenter told me is that I use the word so. It's called a tick word, and I was saying it a lot. And she she would just raise her hand, kind of very discreetly raise her hand every time I said it. And I'm looking over at her, and she's raising her hand. I said, oh my goodness, I didn't realize I used that word so much. And I think, so keeping track of, try to pay attention and write down, just make a tick mark somewhere on a sheet, a little piece of paper or sticky note of how many times you say, I wish, or I'm stuck, or I'm trying. Anything that's negative, pay attention, because it'll help you to understand yourself a little better. And then start thinking about the stories or the voice that you're hearing, or the stories that you're carrying with you. Because what happens is that we get really cozy with these stories. They're very familiar. They're comfortable. In my affirmation, my truth cards, one of the things I wrote is I am disciplined and efficient, because I kept telling myself, oh gosh, I'm just not disciplined. And I had to stop. I had to stop thinking that I wasn't. And as soon as I started thinking and telling myself, yes, actually you are disciplined and efficient, it was easier for me to start being that and stepping into it. So make the connection, because our stories can keep us comfortable and can help us to avoid doing things, avoid trying too hard, avoid moving forward, or avoid facing failure. So the stories we tell ourselves, it's because we're trying to avoid something, most likely. So make that connection. Start thinking about what am I avoiding by telling myself this. The other thing Ed mentioned at the beginning was take out the garbage. And this is one of my favorites, is just make a list of the stories and the words, your tick words, any word that you're saying on a regular basis. Write down what it would look like to feel, look and feel like, to replace them with something new and more positive and more empowering. And then the next step would be literally to take action. So look at the stories you've written down, the things that might be holding you back, and decide, which one am I going to work on this week? And just pick one. Start small. Pick one. Because if you try and do too many at once, you're going to get overwhelmed and probably not have the kind of result that you're going for. So just pick one to change and start moving forward with keeping that tick list of how many times you say something to yourself, whatever the case may be. And then establish your values. I was just talking about that. I think these things never change, and these give us a lot of confidence. The fact that I do what I say I'm going to do, I would, you know, do anything for my clients, that kind of thing. Whatever it is that you feel is a really strong characteristic for you, then definitely write that down. And again, put those on your truth cards. That's a great thing to remind yourself of on a daily basis. The next thing is to practice, practice, practice. I read that quote about the confidence being a muscle. It's so true. You got to do your reps. You got to go to the gym every day. You got to do your reps. And this is the same thing. You know, do things like write some truth cards for yourself. If you're not comfortable asking or speaking up, start raising your hand. Get yourself out of your comfort zone and change your routine. That's a really helpful thing to do, is kind of get you thinking differently, and so you're not just automatically reacting or thinking in a particular way. And then
one thing I was going to add there, Susan, sure. One thing that has helped me with that, changing the routine, I couldn't agree more, is then that day or that morning, work for a couple hours out of a coffee shop or a restaurant. Because there's something about that will help me, I guess, shine a spotlight on these stories that I can't do if I'm in my regular environment.
Right.
You know, I can't explain it, but if I'm somewhere else and I'm going to say, today I'm going to just spend a couple hours working on identifying some of these stories, writing down my values, right? Those kinds of things, then
absolutely.
I can do it if I'm somewhere else. It's clear to me, like some of the best insights, some of the best ideas, insights that I've ever had have been on an airplane.
Yeah,
a long flight. Because you were stuck, and I refuse to do, I mean, I'll give myself a little bit of time to, you know, watch a movie, of course, you know, but I don't want to do mindless stuff the whole time. And that's an opportunity for me. It's a totally different environment. I'm going to work on this thing for 30 minutes on the flight. And man, I tell you, it just comes at me like it wouldn't in my office.
I've done some amazing work on airplanes too. Yes. I know what you mean. And I got to a point where I always make sure that I'm prepared, that I have, if I can't plug in, that I've got a pad and a pen that I like, you know, a fully loaded pen that I could just keep writing. Yeah. Cause I do some of my best work in that quiet, you're stuck, you have to sit. All right.
Let's get yes. to work. Yeah. Another thing that I was going to add too, in terms of, you know, the first thing you said, keep track of the stuff for a day. I find that I forget. That sounds like a great idea, but I get busy just like we all do. And then I'll forget to ask myself that. So one thing that has helped me is set a timer. Mm. And when it goes off, then I got to ask myself, okay, either right now or over the past 15, 20 minutes, what have been some of my thoughts? Like, let's examine that. And then that way I do it. I don't know. It seems to work for me.
Yes.
I guess some people are more self-aware. I kind of live in my head and I don't realize that I'm having this conversation with myself unless I take the time. I need a cue.
Yes.
So
yes.
I wanted to mention that.
Yeah, it is hard. I agree. It's really hard. And especially if it's become such a strong habit for you, then you don't even realize. You might look back and say, gosh, I don't think I did, but like I had a visual cue from from the woman that I was working with. She, every time she heard it, she would raise her hand, and it was powerful. So it really forced me to pay attention. So yeah, I think a timer is a great idea. And the last thing that I would suggest is to educate yourself. And I mentioned a couple of books that I used to prepare this discussion for today are You Are a Badass. It's Jen Sincero. If you haven't read it, oh my goodness, get it. It's just such she's a hysterical. Talk about a really unique writer. She's got a great style, and she's very funny. The Confidence Code is written by a couple of women. They actually went out and did research to figure out why are some women more confident than others? Where does it come from? They really dug in, and they did a kind of a fairly scientific approach, but mostly interviewing people. And a very interesting book. And then the other one is Slay the Dragon, which was Lisa Jimenez, who I mentioned that I met, that I came across several years ago. And she's the one who helped me to get those truth cards together and really turn a corner for myself. So for me, the bottom line is the one message that I think I really want you to hear loud and clear in regards to this is that you have to work at it. It is a muscle that you have to strengthen. Don't let your lack of confidence be the reason that you don't progress. And don't let it get in the way. If this is something you're truly struggling with and you're here today, you're listening, maybe you're listening to the recording and it's something that has been just dogging you and you really want to get rid of yourself, your lack of confidence, your lack of self-confidence, you really do have to work at it. And one of my favorite quotes from Jen Sincero is, one of the best things you can do to improve the world is to improve yourself. And this is a good place to start.
I love that. Just a reminder that, hey, we're here to serve others and we can't fully serve others if we're not improving ourselves. So
indeed.
That kind of takes it away from it feeling selfish sometimes. Mm. Like, look, I'm doing this not just for me, but really for others.
Yeah.
Love that. Hey guys, so we included an exercise that I'm going to have Susan walk you through really quickly. It should be on the page for this session where you access this session, but I have a little cheat sheet, a little direct URL to it if you didn't see it or you're not there right now. And it's b2blauncher.com/confidencePDF. all together, all lowercase. So b2blauncher.com/confidence PDF. That's the direct download link. So take a look at that. And I encourage everyone to take some time, sometime this week, if you can. In fact, I would make it a point to do that, even if you just get started. And it's going to take some of what she shared here and give you something actionable that you can work on. So Susan, you want to kind of walk us through the exercise?
Absolutely. It's 7 steps, and it's going to help to get you thinking about all of this. And hopefully this discussion has got you started thinking and got you intrigued. But the worksheet really kind of steps you through some things that you can take action on. And so the first step is to decide, you know, what are my stories? And what are 3 or 4 things that I say to myself on a regular basis that are negative? Step 2 is, what do I get to do or not do by using these stories? So you list your 3 or 4 stories that you tell yourself. And for each one, you write one way you're using it to stay put. The third is, what's the worst thing that could happen if I change? So again, create a list of possible outcomes if you were to think or act differently and change that story. The fourth is, what must I replace these stories with? So for each one, write a way that you'd have to change it in order to reach a higher level of performance, of effectiveness, of self-confidence, whatever. Then step 5 would be, what would my alter ego do? And this is something that Ed and I talked about a lot. And so perhaps your hero, maybe it's like a Batman or Wonder Woman, how would they show up? What would they do in a situation? And your Wonder Woman or your Batman might be someone that you know, someone that you admire and that has wonderful confidence, a really mature and very sophisticated type of confidence that you'd like to be more like. And always think, okay, how would they respond in this situation? How would they act? And number 6, what story will I start with? So pick, as I mentioned, pick one thing that you're going to work on changing this week, that you're going to start to be more aware of. And what one story am I going to work on changing? And then step 7, for the bravest among you, is to post on the Facebook group for whatever program you're part of. What do you commit to working on? And one action step that you're going to take. And I'll be very interested and excited to see how that, how many people take on that challenge and step in, because this is something, if there's one thing I can implore to all of you listening is, you know, I shared my story. I went through some pretty rough times, and really, if I had just stood still, I would still be there. And that's just not okay. It's something that's changeable, fixable. You can start today. And if that's what's getting in your way, goodness sakes, remove it. You know, get that obstacle out of your way, because it doesn't have to hold you back. If you think that that's part of why you're not asking for bigger projects or not asking for more money, tackle this. Tackle it with all you've got so that you can get it out of the way and really reach a high level of potential that's probably in there. You just need to kind of clear some space for that confidence to come out.
Guys, first of all, Susan, thank you. Thank you for sharing these ideas with us. This is powerful, powerful stuff. I know that you guys have gotten some, well, I hope you've gotten some useful ideas out of this. And of course, Susan then narrowed it down to an exercise that will make the stuff actionable. This is not going to start having an impact unless you start doing these things, guys. And as you can see in the exercise, it's one step at a time. Okay, so just wishing alone is not good enough. That can help you make some progress, but this is, as you can see, a work in progress thing. This is a journey. So I urge you to take it seriously and, you know, work through that exercise. Start this week. You know, I like to say, look, make an appointment with yourself. Carve out 30 minutes to just see how much of the exercise you get done. Don't worry about setting a goal to finish the exercise this week. I mean, if you got plenty of time, yes. But if you know things are tight, carve out just 30 minutes and set a timer and just start working on some of these questions. And don't race through it. I mean, I think one of the best things you could do with these kinds of questions is keep asking yourself, okay, so what? So what does that mean? And then what would that lead to? Go deeper. Don't cheat yourself. Okay. So that's how you can start making progress. Not just, you know, we didn't want this to be kind of a feel good kind of thing. We really want you to start working on this stuff so you can make progress, like real tangible progress. I wanted to open it up to Q&A. And if you got a question, we'll just keep it simple. Type it in the chat area. Let us know. I can unmute you. If you prefer that we don't unmute you, let's say you're somewhere where it's really noisy or you're in a car or whatever. Well, if you're in a car, hopefully you're not typing the question. but let me know as well. But we got an open flow right now. We got time for plenty of questions. So ask away. If you got anything for Susan or for me, just type it in. And by the way, Susan, Margot had typed in that she loved that Huffington Post quote. If you could hear that in the, she's in the accelerator group.
Oh, accelerator. Great.
Yeah.
We'll do.
I agree. That was powerful stuff. And Katie had mentioned Brené Brown.
Yes.
So powerful. By the way, those of you who are on Netflix, Brené Brown released a couple of months ago. She's got the talk there on Netflix. Let me just search Brené Brown. It is powerful stuff, man. It's like one of those, I'm like, okay, I need to watch this like three times.
Yeah, I did. I ended up watching it after we talked about it. And she's hysterical too. She's really fun to listen to. And at first, so it starts off a little bit slow almost. I'm like, I'm not sure where she's going with this, but then she really gets into it and it's about confidence and about showing up. It's great. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And her books are wonderful. They could be a little bit difficult to kind of get through sometimes because they're a little bit dense in parts, but I think this is a good summary of kind of her message. So
definitely.
All right. All right. So come on, guys, this is a session on self-confidence. Don't be shy.
Show us what you got.
Yeah. Just want to make sure I'm not missing anybody. So yeah, just ask away, guys. It's we're here for you. And anything you need feedback on an area, maybe an area that you're trying to work on and you're not really sure, you know, how to get past some of the obstacles that you're facing. Katie says, I'm not very adept at identifying the stories. So I guess, you know, really it's any ideas, Susan, on how you can maybe start identifying those.
Well, the first thing that I would do is look for a pattern. So take a look at, is there something that every time this situation comes up, I always respond this way? So think back over, maybe it's something to do with money. We'll use that as an example. So maybe it's every time I get into a conversation with a potential client about money, it never goes well. And so maybe you want to figure out, you know, am I not prepared? Am I telling myself a story? Like if you recall, you may not recall, but one of the things that I wrote on my truth cards was, I am proud of the way I make money. Because I found that was something that was a challenge for me. I grew up in a fairly poor environment, and so money was kind of a demon. It was almost a negative, and that was a story I had to fix if I was going to start making good money, and I wanted to. So I realized that was something that I needed to focus on. The other thing is to feel it too. In other words, Is there a knot in your stomach the minute that this particular situation comes up? Are you responding physically, your shoulders drop and you feel like you want to crawl under the desk or something like that? You know, look for physical cues. Sometimes that can be helpful to just decide, oh my gosh, you know, I get a headache every time somebody starts talking about this or that. Look for ways that you physically respond in situations that, again, it's a habit and it's become such a habit and we're so comfortable with it that we're not recognizing that we're doing it. So you want to look for the physical as well as maybe just that, a pattern of, geez, every time that comes up, you know, do I have a problem? And there's, so I mentioned three books in my, you know, putting these, there are lots of books about money your relationship with money. There's a lot of coaches that talk about this. Do just Google. I don't know, Ed, if you have any favorite authors or any favorite resources around your relationship with money. But this is a big discussion, very popular, lots of resources. So if that happens to be one of your issues, that, you know, I'd recommend educate yourself.
Yeah, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I know something that I have done. I always ask myself, you know, I had a really strong feeling about this, like it, fear-based. As I think about the situation I'm about to walk into, yeah, it's like fear or like avoidance. And I will sit in my reading chair and I'll just ask myself, you know, where is that coming from? Like, and as I start thinking about that, many times it's something that's deeply rooted from my past life, like my childhood.
Right. Exactly.
You know, since you mentioned that, you know, like you, how you were growing up. I'll give you an example. So one of the many reasons I never wanted to be in sales, which happened to be the only job I could find right out of college, was, looking back, like I resisted it for a long, long time. In looking back, it was really an issue of just being rejected as a kid. You know, like I was one of the kids who, I was never great at sports. So we'd play in our neighborhood and, you know, you know, you get the two captains and you have to select the players. I was always one of the last ones to get picked. I was like, okay, well, I guess we'll take Ed, you know? And man, as a kid, if you've ever been in a similar situation, that will eat you up, and in that you will never forget that. Now, I think that was suppressed. But it started like coming up. So I don't, you know, I'm no psychotherapist, but I realized that that's where a lot of this fear came from, you know, in terms of selling and talking with people on the phone and, you know, asking someone for the sale. Even to this day, it's an issue. I've gotten a lot better, but one of the biggest things was recognizing that that came from those situations, you know, yep, where I was like the last one to get picked. And like, you know, many times it came with not just, all right, we'll pick Ed. It came from, you know, comments about like, great, you know, we're stuck with him again, you know? Yes. Like those kinds of things. Yeah. So, yeah. I think if you sit with it for a while and you just ask yourself, you know, where's that coming from? It probably has a long history there.
It sure does. Yeah, most likely.
Okay. So, oh, good. Some questions are coming in. Let's see. Robin says, I have a lot of unconscious confidence issues. I'm not aware of it until someone points it out or I have a weird reaction to something. Not sure what to watch for. So I'm not sure what the question is, but I kind of think like you've addressed it in terms of what to watch for. But I mean, in terms of people pointing it out, it sounds like they see it before you do. So any comments, Susan, or suggestions here?
I think it's awesome if you have somebody that you trust, you know, or someone can point something out. I hear that a lot in the way that people talk. So when I hear people like on coaching calls or things like that, I can usually get a sense of whether or not there is it's a confidence issue. So if you have people pointing it out, the best thing to do is to ask, hopefully have a chance, if you have a chance, to ask a deeper question. So to say, that's interesting that you noticed that. What specifically made you think that? You know, ask that question. What exactly did I do or say that made you think that way? What did you see? So that you can kind of get a sense a little more specifically, what's happening, you know, where is that, how is it outwardly being projected onto other people and how's it landing on other people? And the other thing is to think too, you know, Ed, both of us are talking about our childhoods. We really do connect with these stories early in life. So be thinking about some of, you know, go back to some of those stories, some of the things that maybe experiences that you had weren't as positive. Maybe someone, you know, said something to you or did something. I actually, when I was a kid, I loved junior high and high school. I loved field hockey. I ended up playing, but the first time I tried out in high school, they posted the list of who made the team. I was the only girl to be cut. And that stuck with me for way too long. It was devastating because they kept everyone else, this huge roster, and they cut me. And I thought, really? You couldn't have just kept me? I mean, come on. Leave me on the bench the whole season. I don't care, but just really. So I did end up going off the team again. But it was one of those things that just, that had such a negative impact on me. You were talking about being picked. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is still following me. And that happened to me when I was, what, 14 or 15? And yeah, it's still following me. And it wasn't a parent or anything. It was just one of those situations where I was so mortified and embarrassed that I was the only one who got cut. And so it was crazy. It's crazy how much that impacted me for a long time.
Kelly has a question about social confidence. She said, one of my biggest stories is that I'm not good with people. Are there any resources I can use to help with social confidence specifically?
Yeah, that's a good one. The first question I would have for you, Kelly, really is, are you an introvert? Because that's really very much a challenge for people who are naturally introverted, just don't do well with people. And so that would be the first thing to decide, and then to find some resources for yourself in and around guidance for people who are introverts. It sounds like you probably are. And then the other thing is to know that what we talked about earlier, Ed, was don't fight it, do what you can, and be the best version of you that you possibly can be in those settings. So in a social setting, what's the best version of you? And what would you be thinking about? What would you be happy with? So in other words, how do you, you're not going to be the center stage all the time because it might not be natural for you, but what would be good? What do you think would be really good? And how would you, what are the ways that you would like to improve? But I definitely would, again, lots and lots of great resources on introvert and how an introvert can network, for example. If you're going to a networking event, that can be really, really hard. And to how to plan for that, you know, what would make that more pleasant for you, but also how would you then walk away feeling like, hey, that actually, I was successful. What would it mean to be in a social situation and have you view it as a success? And maybe be a little more specific, but I'd definitely dig up a resource or two for that and grab a book and read about it and see what you can learn.
I would say, so I did and I know you're familiar with him, Susan, I interviewed Matthew, what was his name?
Matthew Pollard.
Yeah. Yeah. So episode 160 of the podcast, bwlauncher.com/episode 160. So he specifically talks about selling your writing services when you're an introvert, but I think in there you'll also find some great ideas. So Matthew is definitely an introvert. And what I love about what he shared is that, you know, how in the world do you sell your services? Do you have these conversations with prospects and clients when you're extremely introverted? And because it's such an extreme situation to be in for an introvert, I think you'll automatically get some ideas. So that would be one. The second thing is, I would question the language you're using with yourself. You know, going back to what Susan said about stories, you specifically said, I'm not good with people. I would challenge you to change that, what you're saying there, to it's harder for me, or I have to work at it more than other people. Because like, there are some things that, I mean, I could say, look, I'm horrible at working on cars. You know, I can't work on cars. I don't know why I just thought of that, but but that's because that's not my profession, or that's because that's not something I've worked on, where I work on a lot. But if I were to dedicate some time to it, I bet I could get better. Now, I bet I'll never be as good as this guy I know, or as my mechanic, Okay. But that's because of other factors. And it's not just, I think the challenging thing about saying I'm not good with people or I'm not good at this is that it feels like such an absolute, and you're really programming and conditioning yourself to say that is like out of bounds.
Yes. You know,
that is out of my league, as opposed to I have to work harder than most people at that. You know, it's not my natural tendency to do well at that. And I think it's so much more healthy. But I agree with you, Susan. It's like there's so many great resources out there how to do well in social settings or work with people when you're an introvert. And lastly, I'll say this, Kelly, I think you do have an advantage when you're an introvert. Many times extroverts can be a little too much in these situations. And I know I'm generalizing here, but introverts have an advantage. They can develop better trust with a lot of people than introverts can. So, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I did the same thing, Kelly, with I'm not a big numbers person. So for a long time, I was telling myself I'm terrible. I'm an English major. I'm a word nerd. Numbers are not my thing. So calculus, algebra, oh my goodness. But I had to change my story when I got into business because I have to be good with numbers. I've got to figure this out because I need to understand my business really well from that perspective. So it was changing that story for myself. So I no longer say that. It's not my strong point by any means in terms of working with numbers, but I'm competent. At this point, I've achieved a level of competency that I feel serves me and that I'm comfortable with. And, you know, my daughter who just graduated as an engineer, I mean, she used to be on the math team in high school. And I used to look at her and go, where did you come from? Oh my gosh. She loved doing math problems. It was hysterical. And it's like, good for you, but that is so not me. So it's just a matter of that I could never do, but boy, do I know the numbers for my business. And that's what's important. I know how to run my checkbook, my personal one. I know how to run my business from a numbers perspective. That is where my proficiency has grown.
So Eva has a great question here. She says, I took on a very large project, now struggling to juggle all my other projects and finding myself taking on the small tasks that I can get off my plate, even though the large tasks would be done when they are done and not ongoing. Normally, I'm a great planner and have my own projects set and I'm able to work through them. So now I'm doubting I can handle this large project. We'll still keep working through everything, but not sure why I'm feeling so off about it.
That's interesting. That's a good question. I think for me, it's a matter of what I'm seeing here. What you've written is it's either you're feeling overwhelmed by the size of the project. If this is a large project, and maybe you've never taken something of this size on. If it's fairly early in the project, I just did this last year. I took on an enormous project that I've never, ever done before. I was scared to death. And it took me a while to get over that, to start. And I had to get into a rhythm that worked. And so I would recommend Eva's to just find a rhythm that works and just do it by numbers. So I'm going to work on, and you even said that you're normally a really great planner, give yourself a limit so that you're only doing X number of the smaller tasks per day and look at, say, you know, I'm going to do no more than three. And then you've got to set time to work on the other project. I think it's, for me, it was fear. When I took my big project on last year, I was scared to death. I just thought I was excited, but I was scared to death. And it took me a couple of weeks to get into a good rhythm of, okay, I think I could do this. And I didn't feel 100% confident going in. Definitely not. And that's another thing too, that we didn't even talk about, but a part of it is, will you ever feel 100% confident? Probably not. Probably not. I don't know about you, Ed, but in what your experience has been, but for me, if I can be like 70% of the way there, I'm good.
Oh, you know what? And I'm glad you brought that up. This is something I've been thinking a lot about recently, guys, is this idea of the way I'm wired is I feel like it's either 100% or nothing, mm-hmm. you know, and with, take this topic today. It's not about getting to 100%. It's like, you know what can I do to get to 80% compliance or 80% improvement? Right. That's where most of the value is going to be. The rest of the 20% will take more work and more time. Okay. But the problem is if you set 100% as your goal, man, you're going to wear yourself out. So yep. let's work toward 80%. Once you're there, then you can work on improving things incrementally. So yeah, I think 80% is the way to go. I will add to Eva that there's been a lot of research done on this, that we tend to self-sabotage when we reach a certain level of success. Like in your case, yeah. I'm not saying this is the, just something to think about. You just landed a big client or this massive project, and you start, like, suddenly all these things start getting in your way. And these are things, we don't know it, but we're doing it to ourselves, and it's fear-based. We are self-sabotaging as a self-preservation tactic to avoid getting out there. So I know it sounds kind of woo-woo, but we really do this. And yeah. as I thought about this, Gay Hendricks writes a lot about this. Is every time we reach a breakthrough, we're going after a breakthrough, we will self-sabotage without knowing it, just because that's our way of preserving, you know, what we have now. So just something to the noodle on. Let's see. Vladimir says, one of the things that can affect my level of confidence is to get a text or phone call from one of my clients in which she indirectly and unfavorably compares me to another person who's doing exactly what she wants done, but I can't do it in the time she wants because I cannot read her mind. Ah, the mind reader. I love those clients. I think people who think we're mind readers. She is a nuclear pharmacist with a difficult personality because of childhood problems, is married with children, and has a large student debt. She's a millennial. Specifically, a TV broadcast news intern friend of hers has taken on a story I already wrote a year ago about her bad job experience, but cannot get newspapers to accept. How should I deal with her unreasonable demands? She phoned me on Sunday night, and she has a habit of calling around the holidays. You know, I feel like this has got several layers to it, the way I'm reading it. I feel, Susan, that this is an issue of boundaries, number one, and establishing expectations, and then making tough decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, there is such a thing as a client you have to let go sometimes. And that's kind of a last resort. But I think what I'm hearing here, Vladimir, this is really first and foremost, not so much about, I mean, of course it can impact your confidence, but establishing boundaries with clients. You know, here's what I can do for you. Here's when we can have conversations. Here's what I can and cannot do. And asking them to respect those boundaries. And if they can't, then, you know, you're going to have to disengage. You know, I think that in and of itself can improve your, of course, your self-confidence over time, because you don't feel like you have to say yes to everything. But more importantly, in the short term, you're going to be able to get out of a bad situation. You know, it's important, and you're the one who's got to set the boundaries. Don't expect your clients to set them for you. They won't, especially people like this. So that'd be my advice there. In terms of how to tie it into self-confidence.
Yep. I agree, because it is self-confidence. You know, we tend to think that it only impacts things like negotiation or the amount of money we ask for projects, but that's two areas that it impacts, but this is another one. So setting boundaries, the more confident you are, the easier it's going to be to do that, I think. Yeah. It definitely allows you to feel good about setting boundaries, and that's really important.
Beverly says, I've had the same childhood angst as you, Ed. Sometimes I can ignore the not worthy feelings, but not always. I find my confidence waxes and wanes with whichever curve of the sine wave my mood is on that day. On the up days, I can change the world. I've learned these are the days to really focus on getting things done. On the down days, my top affirmation card would be, you deserve to breathe the same air as the rest of civilization. I don't recommend making that card. On those days, I'm lost and find that I crave nothing more than someone saying, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, so Susan, definitely want your take on this. I would say my only answer is that's a card right there. You're going to be okay.
Yeah, I agree. You know, with this, the other thing is just become an observer. And so look at that down day and say, huh, that's interesting. I'm having a down day. Don't fight it. We've talked a couple times about not fighting these things because there's nothing you can do. It's a down day. We all have them. And maybe you just take better care of yourself that day. You show yourself a little more kindness, a little more self-respect in the sense of, hey, you know what? I'm having a down day. It's cool. And tomorrow's a new day. So, just float through it, if you will. Just wait until it passes and keep going. But, it's not something that there's anything really to be done about, unless it's impacting a deadline of some kind, which obviously you need to be a little more aggressive. But I agree. Just, you're going to be okay. I think that's a great suggestion, Ed, is to just, have that be one of your truth cards. Is it, and tomorrow's a new day and this too shall, all things shall pass, right? This too shall pass and you'll be fine. I think it's just a matter of being okay with, exhale, breathe and float through it and wait to see what tomorrow brings.
Yeah. Every day is a new slate. I love that. And there've been some days where I just thought, okay, wow, let's put this one behind us. This is horrible. the next day I try to bring in a totally new energy and just getting that rest and just feeling like I've hit the reset button. That helps. I mean, I'm not saying it cures everything, but that definitely helps. So just try to look at each day as a new opportunity to start all over, kind of like Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
I love that. It's like, man, what a cool concept, to be able to just kind of start all over. Oh, let me fix what I did wrong yesterday. Allison has a comment here about the introvert stuff. She says, with introvert stuff, I found that over the years, owning it helps. I'm not good at coming up with quick responses to something. I need to take it in, digest, and then come back to you. Now I mention that to people up front. I say something like, the way I work is take this away and think it through. Or let me think about that.
Absolutely.
That's brilliant, Allison. Yes. Good stuff.
Love it.
All right. So let's take one more and we're going to wrap up. So some great comments here. Good stuff, guys. All right. So the last question here is from Grace. She says, do you have any advice for boosting confidence when managing others? I have begun to train other writers and editors to help take on larger projects, but have really struggled making the leap from solo to leader/manager. Great question.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one for you, Ed, because you've done that.
Yeah. So I'm like Allison. I need to process that. So I'm going to give you the first thing that came to mind because I started it was like nobody. And then I hired Crystal. She was with me for 5 years. Now we're up to seven. There's seven of us. It was really scary at first because I thought, well, several things. First of all, can I possibly keep these folks on board? are they, what if I turn them off? What if I say something or do something that turns them off? I'm showing them everything. I just felt a little bit exposed for no real good reason. There's all kinds of stuff that started coming up and I get it. Like my confidence went up and down. What I did find, Grace, is that somehow you build that muscle. Like it gets easier. You hire that first one. Like I remember hiring Crystal. That was a big, big step. But then after that, that became the new normal. And then it just felt like it was just one of us, even though there was two of us. So then bringing on the next person, it was a little scary, but not as scary as the first person. And and then you do it incrementally as opposed to doing too much at once. I think that was really the key for me. It's not because that's the way we set out to do it. It's just I couldn't afford to bring in a whole team right away, and it didn't really make financial sense. So I would say you get used to it. That becomes a new normal, and then you bring on somebody else. It really helps if they buy into your vision and your mission. Because if they do, that's going to really feed your self-confidence. That's going to help you feel good knowing that the people who you're bringing on board are really they really like where you're going and what you do and how you work. So just kind of explaining that to them and just showing them what you're about, what's meaningful to you and why you do what you do and what you care about, and having them buy into that, man, that is absolutely huge. And then you're going to feel like they're committed, as opposed to, I got to prove myself to them all the time, because I don't know, sometimes I wonder if I'm worthy of having them on the team. You know, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a practice. That was one of my, to-do items is practice. That's
exactly. That's it. Practice, it becomes your new normal. And then, okay, yeah. Now that's like that new level. And then you build on that. Guys, so this has been great. I want to just kind of recap where we are. And I'd like for you guys to help us with that. So if you wouldn't mind typing in kind of a big takeaway for you today from our conversation in the chat area, just let us know one. Hopefully you got more than one. But let us know, what was your biggest takeaway from today's session? Just type it into the chat area. And Susan, while we're waiting, thank you. Thank you again for sharing this with us.
Awesome. And
for being vulnerable, you know, that vulnerability like Brené Brown talks about, man, that's huge. That's something many of us aren't willing to do these days.
No, it's hot. Well, you know, I remember when I got fired from this one job. I was actually vice president of operations, and it's a whole long story. It was a great job. I had an amazing team under me, and they walked me to the door one day and said, here, don't come back. Oh. I was mortified because I was not young. This was not too long before I started with, a few years before I started writing full time. And I was mortified and embarrassed. And then I had a friend, I was talking with someone, and I said, it's the first time I've ever been fired in my life. And that's just so not me. And she said, oh, you're a late bloomer. And when she said that, I thought, oh, thank you. Thank you for letting me off the hook. Like not everyone gets fired, but I was pretty proud of the fact that I'd never been fired. It was, I just felt like, oh my gosh, I've done something terribly wrong. And I didn't. It's a very long involved story, but these guys were, the people, these two gentlemen I was, who owned the business were, they were constantly looking. They thought everyone was out to get them. I can't think of the word, but yeah, they had some issues. And then I found out that I was the fourth person to be fired from that position in 2 years. Okay, good. All right. But it's just funny because you just get so caught up in that kind of stuff. And I think sharing the stories, just being vulnerable and talking about that actually really helps me. It's therapeutic to be able to talk about. I love being able to go back and think about where I was at those really difficult times in my career, and be so grateful that I'm not there anymore, but also to think, all right, look at how much I've accomplished since then. I mean, I came from, a pretty low point to today of just being so happy with my work and just seeing this come to fruition. So being vulnerable like that is actually kind of nice to be able to turn around, look back and say, I've worked hard to get here and done what I needed to do.
Well, I want to echo one thing you said there, and that is we tend to always be looking up and forward at the summit. Yes. And we rarely take time to look back, how far we've come. Okay, yes. So that, to Grace's point, that would be another thing, and many of the questions that were asked here, take some time to kind of take stock of where you are. I like to do this at least twice a year, if not quarterly, just kind of review, because it's so easy to get caught up in what I haven't achieved, or where I'm lacking or where I'm struggling, and not look back at everything you've accomplished. So great, great stuff. All right. So some of these takeaways are great. Allison says, biggest takeaway, confidence is a tool you can practice, build, and develop. It's not a mystical quality some have and some don't. Exactly. And it's a work in progress, right? I mean, Susan and I are working on this stuff all the time. We got our own junk we're dealing with daily. Beverly says, everyone has doubts. It's okay. Be aware, be an observer, rewrite the stories that matter.
Yeah.
Margot says that we're all struggling with confidence in one way or another, and we need to continually work to strengthen our confidence. Great to know I'm not alone in this. Oh, sister, you're definitely not. Grace says, confidence is a muscle. Yeah. Andrea says, two takeaways. The struggle is real. Practice the mantras. Mm. I love that. Lucia, sorry, I'm in the office. Oh yeah, I can only listen, but it was still very helpful. Great. Kelly says, start working on the confidence cleanse exercises ASAP this week and take one task at a time. Yes. Awesome. So yeah, that's everyone's action item, by the way, is start working on that worksheet. Katie says that developing the list of both skills, what I'm good at, and the values that enhance my package. Charlotte, acknowledge the stories you're telling yourself that are holding you back. Yeah, there you go. I mean, like, let's get them out there. They lose their grip over you when you put them out there, when they're visible. Vladimir, aside from learning about confidence, what was helpful was to identify the specific negative things we say to ourselves and to change them. Yeah.
Great.
Good stuff, guys. Well, listen, thanks for hanging out with us today. I appreciate it. Again, Susan, thank you so much.
Yay. So glad you're all here. I'm glad it was helpful. It's awesome.
Absolutely. We'll get this stuff uploaded in the training portal. We'll include, of course, the PDF if you're somewhere you couldn't get to it today. But make that commitment to yourself. Start working on it this week. And for those of you who are willing to do it, please, I encourage you to post in your respective Facebook group, where you are, what you're doing, what you're up to. And that'd be great. Not just as for the accountability part of it, but I think just kind of the encouraging others as well, that you're taking that first step. So guys, have a great rest of the day. And we'll talk soon. Take care, everybody.